So today, although I was actually supposed to give you more information and more extra talks about the dangers of these desires for profit, adoration, and distinction, I'm thinking that it's probably best that we just move on to shloka number 8, and I take that up later on toward the end as part of a summary, as part that additional information, considering that we basically covered the shloka 7 contents of the commentary pretty well. I was just hoping to give you some extra information right away, but unfortunately I'm being pulled by a few different directions, so I didn't have enough time to get it together. And as part of a summary toward the end, I think I can try to get that together, that additional information, which will be helpful hints for you. These three verses together, the verse about abandoning lust, abandoning fault-finding mentality, and abandoning the desire for profit, adoration, and distinction. They all three go together, hand in hand, all these three verses, as in order for beneficial help for those who are struggling on the path to become pure, to bring themselves up to a higher standard, purposely to a higher standard by which we can make ourselves worthy of being accepted by our spiritual masters for offering to Krishna, happily. So now we're going to go on to verse number 8 today instead, and I'll take up additional information later on. More or less as part of a day for summary. I can leave one day then as a summary for summarizing additional information. As to the lotus feet of Vaishnava devotees, is there instructions? That's the main thing. That's what it's considered to be. When it mentions in the song of Narottam Das Thakur that H.I. Gosai Taramuri Das Tasabara Padarena Mora Panchagras, that their dust of their feet are their five kinds of food stuff. Basically, it's referring to their instructions. Anybody that I've asked to. Another thing also, in Madhuri Kadambini, this is stressed about in Vaishnava Aparad, where it mentions there that one who offends a great devotee of Mahabhagavat is certainly diminished by the dust of their lotus feet. Meaning that although the pure devotee may forgive, the offense is committed because of their magnanimous nature. They don't take offense at anything. But still, the dust of their lotus feet takes offense and communicates the results, the reaction of the offense. That's what it says. So, that's what the shloka says. It's a shloka from the fourth canto, Bhagavatam. So the whole idea of it is that if one takes Vaishnavas in a very lenient way, lackadaisical way, consider them to be ordinary human beings, then the benefit that you would accrue from their instructions, if you're what comes out of their mouth must also be ordinary. If that happens, then you lose any benefit from it. It doesn't register in your mind as something which is beneficial. It doesn't change your condition of the heart. It does not make an impression on your mind and on your psyche. See? So that's the effect of offensive attitude to devotees. You treat them ordinary in their instructions. Cannot touch the heart. But just like any type of aparada, either by accepting sinful reactions from it, undergoing some tribulation or some suffering accrued as a result of the offensive behavior, these type of things may shock the person to again reflect on it again, take another view again. So, or when other devotees, by preaching to somebody or discussing with somebody, shows the real glories of that other particular Vaishnava that was offended, then it means that the person may again have a change of mind and start to regard that person with, you know, with humility. When you take the instructions again with sudanya mati, not with an arrogance, then you may be able to start to appreciate them and understand them. At that time, you can again become, your mind and intelligence becomes favorable to accept those instructions again. And those instructions can make an impact. So, unless, that's what it means about the dust of the lotus feet, because of these great souls, according to Madhurya Kadambini. When you offend great devotees, then it means that you no longer, their instructions no longer have any effect on the consciousness to create a tangible benefit. You can't take advantage of the instructions because the instructions have been minimized due to you thinking that this person is an ordinary human being, an ordinary personality, and his opinion is no better than anybody's opinion. That's the idea. So, now, their food remnants, that's very clearly described. The ability of the food remnants of Vaishnavas to immerse one in spiritual life is described nicely by Narada Muni. First Canto, Chapter 6, somewhere around the Chapter 6 and Chapter 7, where he's describing about how he met the Bhaktivedantas and engaged in devotional service, even though he was a son of a maidservant. Chapter 6. And he imagines by taking the prasadam from them, the very nature of a transcendentalist became attractive to me. Narada Muni admitted to Vyasadeva. So that does have an effect. Prabhupada gives the commentary in that about that statement, about that type of situation, that just as one becomes contaminated by an infectious disease through eating food that has been eaten by somebody that has a cold, you know, or malaria or something like that, some communicable disease. So similarly, taking the food remnants of great souls specifically, like of the spiritual master, etc., others, then one becomes in contact with their bhava, with their mood. That's the idea. Purified by that. But there are rules and regulations regarding uchishta. First thing is the bhajan, Kripa Koro Vaishnava Thakur, which we sung a few lines from it. Nija Shrestha Jani Utishtari Dani Tavi Abhimana Bhar Thai Shisha Tava Thakya Saravada Nalaibe Pujakar. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings here that he mentions by giving others the remnants of my food, if I allow that, then I will consider myself superior, so-called superior, and I will be burdened with the weight of false pride. Therefore, always remaining your surrendered disciple, I'll not accept worship from anyone else. This is the mood of a devotee. However, in regards his own spiritual master or his own worshipable superiors, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says here, Tomarare uchista para jalareinu nish saranishka pati bhaji. I sincerely worship the remnants of your food, O pure devotee, as well as the water that has washed the sacred dust of your lotus feet. So, for one superior, one accepts that as a very nice opportunity. But that is only to be given to disciples or somebody that considers oneself to be in the platform of a disciple, who considers themselves to be a shiksha disciple or something like that. Or someone who is in a relation of seniority and affection, just like your spiritual master, then you may serve him like as well as your spiritual master. Take his instructions as well as your own spiritual master, even if your spiritual master has departed. This is called the process of anugatya. Anugatya means that you follow in the footsteps of the previous acharyas and follow in the footsteps of senior authorities, even in the absence physical absence of your own spiritual master. You continue taking shiksha and follow the next line of superiors, next line of superior Vaishnavas, always placing yourself under the shelter of another Vaishnava. That's called anugatya. Gati is goal, so anugatya is the following by which you achieve the goal. That's the idea. It's called anugatya. So, according to the rules that I heard from Bhaktivedya Purna Maharaj and others about uchista, remnants, he said, if one has no disciple, then one is not allowed to give uchista, remnants of his plate. A sannyasi or any person renunciate is not allowed to leave any remnants on his plate. If he has no dependents, meaning no disciples. Renunciate has no dependents, meaning wife or children. Then, if a householder has dependents, then he, after he finishes his meal, he should leave half of his plate for his wife, etc. Or one half or one two-thirds of his plate for his wife or his dependent children. Then they will put more on top of that patta, that leaf plate, and finish it off, you know, like that. That's the idea, to show their submission, subordination, dependence on their pati, their lord, their father or husband, as the case may be, in terms of grihastha etiquette in days of yore, in days long past. That was the mood. Of course, one should not utilize such things for a platform of exploitation type of thing. Like Gorkhasur Das Babaji, when there was a story about one householder just got married, he said to Gorkhasur, I'm newly married, give me some instructions. Oh, you're newly married. Then when you offer your food to your Shalagram deity, Brahman has kept a Shalagram in the house, then you should give Narayan's, the Lord's prasadam to your wife first, considering her to be Krishna Priya, being dear to Krishna. Then after she is finished, you may take her remnants. That goes against the general tendencies of Indian Vedic life. But Gorkhasur Das Babaji Maharaj gave that instruction to that householder so that he may see his wife as Krishna's property and refrain from developing the mentality that she is his property and fit for his enjoyment. To remove the Vishayi Bhava from the mind of the householder. It's an interesting statement about uchista. Now, I already also mentioned to you previously in a previous lecture about Mahadeva, Shiva, how the followers of Lord Narayan generally, according to Bhriga Muni in the fourth canto, when the cursing and counter-cursing was going on with Nandi, between the followers of Lord Shiva, Virabhadra and everyone, and Nandi and Bhriga Muni, on behalf of Daksha and the other Munis. So according to this, anyone who takes the remnants of Lord Shiva, they become covered over with ignorance, according to Bhriga Muni's curse. Now, but yet we saw in Chaitanya Charita Mahakavya, Murari Gupta mentions that Gauranga Mahaprabhu ate the remnants of Lord Shiva, prasad of Lord Shiva. And Damodar Pandit asked, why? And Murari Gupta said, our Prabhu has not done wrong. He is, when you consider Mahadeva to be the greatest Vaishnava, then when you take the remnants of a great Vaishnava who is attached to Krishna, you become more attached to Krishna. In that activity, our Prabhu, Lord Chaitanya, has not done wrong. However, if you consider Lord Shiva to be something separate from Krishna, if you can make the offense of considering him to be him in his life and his mood and his teachings and everything, to be somebody who is separate from Krishna, out of a spiteful attitude against the Vaishnavas, the mood of a separatist, like that, to separate Lord Shiva, considering the worship of Lord Shiva to be something separate from the Vaishnavas, then, for such people with such an envious attitude of the Vaishnavas, the curse of Bhriga Muni becomes effective. This is Murari Gupta's tikka, his commentary on the statement. So by that, Damodar Pandit became satisfied. So it shows you that even the remnants of persons like Lord Shiva, if you take it, you're not, Vaishnavas are not supposed to eat the remnants of any demigod. worship that are worship. But Mahadeva can be taken in that mood. If you see him as a great Vaishnava. Now, what happens if one may think that all of them are Vaishnavas? If one sees them all in terms of Vaishnava, then it may not be any harm. But one should generally avoid it. Generally, the rule is that one should avoid the other demigods. Mahadeva is like in a special category. Of course, it mentions that Ganpati is also auspicious because he worships Lord Nrsingadev. And thus, he's become auspicious in the platform of devotees for removing obstacles. But still, nevertheless, remnants is something that has to be careful. One is not allowed unless one has disciples. One is not allowed by Shastra. So when I asked once one godbrother who only has like 3 disciples, and I remember at one Calcutta Rathiatra that some disciples of another godbrother were pouncing on his plate. And then I said, but Maharaj, you know, they're eating, they're not your disciples and they're eating off your plate. How is that? They know why. You know, that's what is his retort. But I was not satisfied, so I said, what is the Siddhanta, Bhakti Vidya Purnam? You know, Maharaj. I was not satisfied by that other sannyasi's, you know, tert statement. So then he gave the Siddhanta like that, that if you have disciples, you have to give 1/2 to 2/3 and dependence on, if you don't, then you're not allowed to. If someone is serving you as your disciple, even though they are initiated by someone else, then you may, in discretion, you may give. Like that. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing, that's the gist I can mention about the food remnants. Sacred instructions, that's understood. Divya Gyanam Dato Dadyat Kuriya De Papasya Kshankshayam Tasmad Dikshati Sa Prokta Deshikais Tattva Kovidei. The verse mentions that diksha is divine knowledge and instructions by which ignorance is destroyed. Papasya kshankshayam becomes destroyed. Diksha, kshayate, is removed. This is what is called diksha by the wise. Jiva Goswami quotes from Bhakti Sandarbha this verse. So transcendental instructions are meant to destroy ignorance. As I mentioned previously, what sadhu sangha meant. Sadhu sangha means inspiring association which effects a permanent change for the better of your life. Sadhu sangha means they change you toward the platform of eternality, sat, by their association. Sadhu, one who is behaving properly, and by his wonderful instructions, it pushes you toward the Supreme and changes your life in a most amazing way. That is called sadhu sangha. So that is transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge that removes ignorance. Now it mentions many, many statements in Bhagavatam glorifies when Maitreya Muni saw Vidura and said that the Ganges purifies after a long time, but simply by seeing devotees, they become purified. Indeed, the holy places become purified by such pure devotees who wander through the holy places. By the people bathe in the Ganges to remove themselves from sinful activities, and by the saintly persons bathing in the Ganges, they neutralize the effects of sinful reactions remaining within the waters of the Ganges. Like this. So saintly persons effect purify. Many times it mentioned the Ganges water can purify after long contact. However, the pure devotees of the Lord purify immediately by their instructions, by their association, by their etc. So these are some of the things that come to mind about the transcendental associates of pure Vaishnavas. And Ladini Shakti is the Ananda potency of the Supreme Lord, whereby the living entity becomes absorbed in blissfulness, eternality of blissfulness, happy nature of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Devotees are absorbed in hearing and chanting about Krishna, so they infect association. Hiranyakasipu is a famous statement of Hiranyakasipu to Prahlad, quoted in Hari Bhakti Shuddhodaya, that association is like a crystal stone. It reflects whatever you put in front of it. So association means if you keep association of satsanga mukta dusungo, you keep association of saintly persons and are stay liberated from bad association. Naturally, such persons, however, of any character or of any background, become purified and become pushed towards Krishna. By following them, they get pushed towards Krishna. That potency is Vishnu Prabha, the potency of the Lord, emanating through His servants. It's called in Madhurya Kadambini, first chapter, Svabhaktya Vasyata. The Supreme Lord likes to allow His mercy to precede the mercy of His devotees. The supreme mercy of the Supreme Lord flows through the mercy of His devotees. That is called Svabhaktya Vasyata. So this is the idea about sacred association. Much more can be said getting other scriptural references from other places about this thing. Now, when he's quoting from Padma Purana, quoted in Lagu Bhagavatamrita, Aradhananam Sarvesham Vishnu Aradhanam Param Tasmata Parataram Devi Tadiyanam Aradhanam Tadiyanam Samarchanam. Famous verse quoted by everybody in so many places. This Tadiya Seva is mentioned in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as being specifically Tulsi. It says there, Atha Tadiyanam Sevanam Tulasya. That's exactly the words used by Rupa Goswami in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when he quotes the verses from Skanda Purana about Tulsi Maharani, two shlokas which are well known. In the old days, I remember in 1972-73, I was coming around the temple. Before they worshipped Tulsi Maharani in the morning, they would read the translation of these Skanda Purana quotes. Tulsi is auspicious in all respects, simply by seeing, touching, remembering, praying to, bowing before, hearing about, simply by sowing this tree, there is always auspiciousness. Anyone who comes in contact with the Tulsi tree in the above-mentioned ways lives eternally in the Vaikuntha worlds. You know, devotees used to read those translations every single day. So, Tadiyanam Sevanam, that which is in Tadiya, which is considered non-different from the Lord, or similar to the Lord, is His pure servants, and of them, the best is considered to be Tulsi. She is an eternally associated, eternally liberated, associated Supreme Lord, appearing as the Gopi Vrindadevi, separately as the transcendental Tulsi plant, both in the spiritual world as well as in the mundane worlds. So she's not an ordinary servant. Transcendental in all respects. But it's interesting, I might say, even greater than this worship of Vishnu is the worship of His pure devotees. Of course, it's mentioned. 11th canto, Madbhakta Puja Byadikar, that my pure devotees should be worshipped, Krishna tells Uddhava. Now, pure devotees, quote unquote, is there are different definitions of what is a Vaishnava. And Gauranga Mahaprabhu goes into that. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Madhya Leela, in different degrees. What is a pure devotee? Shivananda Sen and other devotees, they asked Mahaprabhu, what is a pure devotee? So in each year, Gauranga Mahaprabhu gave increasing intensity of definitions of what is a Vaishnava. Pure devotees generally refer to Uttamadhikari types, and they're exceedingly rare. You don't see them on the streets. They're exceedingly rare. I have to say it from personal experience, however, that if you do meet a pure devotee, you'll never forget it for as long as you live. They make an indelible mark. Samskara. Samskara means a reformatory mark on the psyche of the devotee that does not go away. A permanent, indelible mark. Samskaras were purificatory processes meant to purify the life of a human being. So when you meet, this is called Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha Sarva Siddhi. By meeting a pure devotee of the Lord, even once, an exceptional pure devotee of the Lord that is actually astounding, they actually carry the Supreme Personality of God with them in their heart, naturally. And thus, by their association, they give that Supreme Personality of God in wonderful ways. So such association, you can never really forget it. I remember that with regards to one particular godbrother, Prabhupada, that left his body, Akinchan Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, who left his body in April, I think it was April 5th, like that, of 1982. Anyway, he was a most astounding Vaishnava, beyond the shadow of a doubt. Now, by serving the feet of the spiritual master, quotes here from Srimad Bhagavatam, one is enabled to develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead. That is clear. I mentioned that. A disciple should associate sufficiently with his spiritual master to see his Krishnanandaya, as the Gayatri Mantra is glorifying, the ecstasy of the spiritual master, the happiness of the spiritual master in worshipping Krishna. Krishnananda. Otherwise, how will the disciple, unless the disciple sees it with his own eyes, how will he meditate on it? Dimahi. As the sloka says, Krishnanandaya Dimahi. So, how, unless the disciple sees that with his own eyes, personally, how will he meditate on the Krishnanandaya Dimahi of the Guru if he does not personally witness it? Of course, he can hear about it from others. By hearing about it is also one type of a way that one develops affection, right? But generally, seeing things with your own eyes is the biggest conviction. So, that statement is clear. Develop transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead. Now, ecstasy, if you want to take that as just simple happiness, in Vaidhi Bhakti Sadhana, just the happiness of Krishna consciousness is understood. Which Rupa Goswami says, Sokya, three kinds of Sokya in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu: happiness of impersonal Brahman, happiness of sense gratification, happiness of the service of the Supreme Lord. Three kinds of happiness. Ecstasy is another story. Happiness in Krishna consciousness is one thing, being happy as a devotee. So, but Krishnananda, so from one sense, Avaiti Bhakti, Krishnanandaya Dimahi could mean just the happiness of the spiritual master in serving Krishna and his spiritual master very steadily. But the other aspect of the transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead is when a disciple actually sees how his spiritual master is absorbed in ecstasies in Raganuga. Sometimes the disciple gets a chance to witness the spiritual master's astasattvika vikara, or something extraordinary, extraordinary ecstasies, while the spiritual master is not aware of his material body as he absorbs himself in his eternal manasik seva of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This means that such a spiritual master, Anuttam Adhikari spiritual master, is highly rare and exceptional. But this is another thing. The service of the personality of God is unchangeable, invincible enemy of the Madhu demon, whose service enables one to vanquish material distresses. Well, that's one of the things about Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is Kleshagni. By engaging in Krishna's service, one immediately becomes free from material distresses. This is not at all surprising, and every one of us have got experience of that when just coming new to Krishna consciousness, just by engaging in the process of devotional life in the association of devotees, we saw ourselves being lifted up, so many material distresses lifted off our heart. So that's not... By serving Krishna in the association of the spiritual master and the devotees, one becomes free from all types of material distresses. That is considered to be a tatastha lakshana. It is a subordinate quality of the aspect of devotional service to Krishna. A minor ring, that your miseries go away. Minor, not the major. Now, the different aspects of devotional service to the Supreme Lord discussed in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu also relate to serving Vaishnavas. Now, yes and no. One has to be very careful about this statement. A Vaishnava is Sevak Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord is Savya Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord to be served, and the spiritual master is Sevak Bhagavan. The personality who is serving Krishna, teaching how to serve Krishna, Sevak Bhagavan. Bhagavan means then the possessor of opulences. So Sevak Bhagavan means then the servitor of Krishna that possesses devotional opulences. As an example for his disciples and everything else. Okay? That is called Sevak Bhagavan. Okay? But naturally, as we mentioned previously, the spiritual master, that though the disciple should be willing to offer all material opulences and things at the feet of his spiritual master, as a representative of the Supreme Lord. So Sharanagati with the Supreme Lord means offering everything to the spiritual master. That demonstrates Sharanagati on the part of a disciple, the willingness to surrender everything to Krishna through his representative. However, as we mentioned, the spiritual master may accept everything on behalf of Krishna and utilize things, yet still he may mention what things are applicable, because there's a relative aspect. Serving the spiritual master personally means usually serving their external body. Serving the spiritual master's external body, feeding, clothing, massaging sometimes, right? Cleansing the spiritual master's room, these type of things constitute service. There are different types of gifts to the spiritual masters, umbrellas, shoes, this type of thing. There's a whole list in shastras. So, but the spiritual master may denote what is necessary, what is not necessary. Because otherwise he should not be guilty of atyahara. He should not show a bad example by accumulating extravagant gifts from his disciples, etc. This is where it falls into the platform of Taranga Rangani. You see? Prophet adoration and distinguished, whereby a nirapeksha sadhaka becomes deceitful if he accepts something extravagant. Of course, what it becomes, sometimes fault finders will always find fault, like you find faults with black spots on the moon. Some people may think something is not necessary at all, or too extravagant, or too wild. For show. The sadhu has accepted it for show. Examples of this, like of this outlandish things, if you go to Kumbh Mela, you'll see that when the sadhus go to bathe, the Mayavadis are generally the first class of sadhus to go to the Sangam to bathe in the auspicious days. And they try to show their superiority over other akharas, other groups, by riding, you know, on silver chariots and elephants, or like this. You follow? They'll write a divinity showing, you know, sadhus will show various symptoms of opulence, silver, you know, silver, gold, walking canes and different types of things. With servants will hold big chhatris, umbrellas over them, waving chamras and this and that, to try to show how our Mahanta is better than any other, you know, akara's Mahanta. He has, there are different, there's a pecking order in the akaras for hundreds of years, which groups are allowed to go bathe first and second. And in 1957 or something, there was a big fight at these sanghams or something, where sadhus were killed, stampeding over each other, trying to assert each other's rights, you know, for bathing in the holy rivers during auspicious times. So, outlandishness to attract the public's attention by flaunting opulence to try to show that he's a big guru or something, that's considered by Raghunath Das Goswami and Rupa Goswami and others to be absolutely unnecessary. Or it can be even downright pratikula, ostentatious, over-extravagant. So a spiritual master may tell, my godbrother Kumarupa gave a nice class, I remember, in years gone by, where he mentions there's a competition. The householders and devotees are trying to offer everything to the guest. The idea of atithi seva, some guest comes to your house. Atithi seva means he was not invited. The unexpected guest who has come, like another form of Narayana, Krishna. God has come in the form of the uninvited guest. So when they come, then such persons, specifically the guest was from a very well-respected family or exalted Vaishnava, householders would tried to satisfy every desire of the renunciate that came to their house. And generally, sadhus would be very careful not to be very humble and meek and not push for too many things. Because see, the problem is that though they would should be very simple. Otherwise, if you desire something and the householder cannot give it for some reason, then the householder is like an offense on the householder's part. So one should consider, according to the means of the householder, what one may ask or one not may ask. Otherwise, if the householder says, whatever you want, I'll give it. But if you can't, if you ask for the wrong thing, it embarrasses the householder, or it may put him in a position where he commits an offense to sadhu by inability to fulfill the desire of the sadhu. That's one thing. So one should not ask what the disciple or what the householder cannot give. One should not ask. That's one type of etiquette. Another type of etiquette is there's a competition. The householder wants to give. You take more, take more, take more. And the renunciate should say, no, I have enough, I have enough, I have enough. You see, so there is a competition. Not that you are breaking the flower. Madhukari means you're taking a little bit from the flower and going away. The flower is not being broken. This is the idea of Madhukari Bhiksha in days of yore, of the past. They would take something at the time of cooking, not that you do baking prasadam or something from weird times. You know, just at the time of milking the cow in the morning, sadhus would bake milk from a householder. Or just at the time when they were cooking, you know, and Brahmins were finished offering the Shalagram Shila, 11:30, 12, noon, 1 o'clock, like that, then they would just show up at the door at that time, and they would get one chapati with a little bit of bhaji, you know, some sabji on top of it. And this way, it does not harass the householder. The householder does not have to go out of his way to give a little food or a little donation to the renunciate begging at his door. So that is the idea of madhukari, a little bit, not breaking the flower, not taking more. So these are the aspects. Some aspects of etiquette. If you take more or try to flaunt some opulence, which is unnecessary, then it becomes ostentatious, it becomes pretentious, and it cheats the public. Now that's, I mentioned that a few things. More can be mentioned later. So let's go on to verse 8 now. Now Savi Sachi, you had a question, what was that? In Vedic Dharma, householders also had disciples. As it mentions in the Chanakya Niti, Lalayada bahavo dosha, tadayana bahavo guna, tasmat putram trashishyam cha, tadayana natu lalayad. That's the injunction. That whether one, when you pat or flatter, that is the cause of all faults. And if you constructively criticize, then that is the cause of all good qualities coming in the heart. So whether it is your disciple or your son, you should constructively criticize and not flatter. This is the verse. I think it's in Chanakya Niti. It's quite a famous. So in the Vedic ages, householders, aside from having Brahminical householders, despite having the responsibility, domestic responsibilities to wife and children, they also took disciples from the neighborhood. They also gave instructions. You know, they were kula gurus. They were local neighborhood village gurus. They also, and they treated it, just like we saw in Vrindavan. All the mothers of Vrindavan were very eager to feed Krishna and Balaram and all the boys. When the boys were coming with Krishna, Mother Jasoda many times would feed all the boys. All the boys that would come and see. And from Ananda Vrindavan Champu festivals are there, then all the boys would come. The whole village would be invited for the festival. So, whether it's your child or somebody else's child in the village, everybody was treated with so much love. They did not make such distinction. This is my son and this is someone else's son. The affection was so deep, it was the same. Whether it is somebody is your disciple or somebody is your son, the affection is the same. Affection is the same. And the relation is also the same, superior. whether it's your spiritual master or it's your father, the etiquette in Vedic Dharma was so close. And every the children, when waking up in the morning, first business was, after their bath, they would go rush and touch the feet of their superiors. In Mahabharata also you see that Duryodhana is coming and touching the feet of Dhritarashtra and Gandhari in the morning. And you know, it's this etiquette. It's the way it was in Vedic age. See, so whether you're a disciple or whether you're a student, respect for the superiors was very much there in the morning and like that. As a son. So Uchista meant that giving to dependents, your disciples or your children, in terms of a householder, Brahmana. That was Uchista. Any other question? You had a question, Prabhu? Is that if one, unless one is actually seeing Krishna eye to eye, one should not, according to this bhajan by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, one should not. Uttamadhikaris, first of all, they always consider themselves to be lower than the lowest. And even when an Uttamadhikari comes down to the Madhyamadhikari platform for the purpose of preaching, he makes distinctions. You see? They make distinctions. Unless one has actually obtained Vastu Siddhi, who actually knows his relationship with Krishna, you see? Then he feels shy, you know, to some people, like his disciples, he has to act out of duty. He has to act as Krishna's representative. Otherwise, they feel shy that I'm very fallen and lowly, you know. They feel shy, you follow? Any Madhyamadhikari should feel shy to... I keep quoting from it, you know, but when the book will finally be published... purportedly from December, at least we'll say safely by next, by Gaur Purnima, well, we should see it, see the light of it, hopefully. It's being edited now. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would only let persons who were his, who had taken Harinam initiation to get any of his remnants. He made sure that the devotee, the disciple that was taking away his plate, that was the standing instruction to, the, to that disciple, that these remnants that are left in the plate must only go to somebody who's taken Harinam initiation, minimum Harinam initiation from him. And the disciple, because that was the order of his spiritual master, was very diligent about following that order. He wouldn't let it slide, you know? The point is this, is that you have to follow the order of the spiritual master. Another example was, is sometimes in the Chaitanya Math, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to take bath. And the water used to flow down a particular pipe, and some intelligent people used to sometimes collect that water, you know, after he took his bath. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur saw that, he felt very sorry, you know. So what he did is then later, from then on, he took bath in a tub, you know, some plastic tub or some other tub. He made sure that, and he told that disciple to take that water and throw it away in the field, you know, far away. When nobody was watching, that disciple would run out and throw it into a field. Like this. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very careful about his bath water, water washing his feet, or, you know, his food remnants. He was very careful. My only really experience with Prabhupada's remnants was once in New Vrindavan 1976 when I actually got that. I think I might have gotten another chance before that to get Prabhupada's remnants. But it's quite rare. It was quite rare. I remember Prabhupada personally handed it out off his plate. He would take a little bit off the plate and then he personally handed it all out. To bin Mahabhagavatas. If they're actually seeing Krishna eye to eye, then they're being ordered by Krishna to distribute mercy. They've been ordered by Krishna to distribute mercy to the fallen conditioned souls. It's like Jayamangal, you know, Abhiram Das Thakur's whip, you know. It gives mercy, what can you say? It beats people, but it gives mercy. Things like that. That when you people take your remnants, your good qualities is transferred to that person who takes the remnants. And proportionally, their bad qualities goes back to the person who ate. It's karmic transfer. Is there any quotes? It is karmic transfer. Therefore, one has to be careful to make sure that the remnant should only go to disciples or those that are in the same category. That's I was discussing with it. One thing you might say, Harinam initiated disciples. Purportedly, their reactions of all their simple activities have already been washed away by Krishna through the process of initiation. Of course, the disciple may commit further after initiation. But in some aspects, by taking the prasadam of the spiritual master, that is, the disciple feels purified. His purification is definitely going on. Any other comment or question? The plate of your godbrother?
Yes.
Out of fun, out of jest, something like that. Already is there about the famous story about that was Krishna, Kaliya Krishna, I think his name was Kalidas, who offered mangoes and different presentations to every single Vaishnav in Bengal. And he went, his only business was to run around and give her something to give to them and take their remnants somehow or another. Because he was attached to eating the remnants of the Vaishnavas all the time, Gauranga Mahaprabhu gave him, he got 3 palmfuls of water from Mahaprabhu's water that washed his feet before Mahaprabhu would enter into the Jagannath temple. He never gave that to anybody, but he allowed this devotee to take 3 palmfuls of that because of this. That's an example, but I really think that no one should try to imitate, you know, Kalidas as an example. Always striving to take the remnants of a Vaishnavas, you know. It's extraordinary. It's an extraordinary state. And I think it's more of an exception. Taking the remnants of your godbrothers and everyone else. I remember in the early days of ISKCON, they used to have the Sunday feast program. And so some of the devotees thought that the prasadam from the Sunday feast was transcendental. So when the karmis threw it out, they thought, why should the prasadam be thrown out? So they were taking it, you know. And Prabhupada said, no. These people are meat eaters, you know, and if they're eating the prasad and they throw out half of it, you should not do it. You may give it to the animals or something, but you should not take it out of the garbage and eat it, you know. It was not becoming of the Vaishnavas. Mahaprasad. This is the distinction. Mahaprasadam of the deity, it cannot be contaminated, even if it has been touched by materialists or something like that. If you think that it becomes contaminated, according to the Puranas, then you go to hell. Do you think it's ordinary food that can become contaminated? Then you go to hell. So, Mahaprasadam, directly from the deity's plate and given to somebody, if they mistakenly threw it away, that can be honored. After having been touched by anybody, that can be honored. And there's no aparad involved. But regular Bhagavad Prasadam or something, there appeared to be some distinction in that regard. You know, the Sunday feast Prasadam left over by the Karmis. Prabhupada did draw the line. Lakshman Rekha there, I'm sorry, you can't eat that. He didn't allow the disciples to eat that. Any other thing? But this statement, this bhajan by Bhaktivinoda Thakur is taking it, it inflates your false ego, definitely. Karmic reaction, Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj verbally told me that in Cape Town in 1994. Cape Town, South Africa, 1994. So it'd be interesting to try to get some Shastra quotes from him in that regard. Okay, now let's choose another tune that gives a good clip. Hey, if you're such a you're a kartal player, get over here. Braja bhumi chintamani achidananda radna khani. Braja bhumi chintamani achidananda radna khani. Jata nityara sera vilasa. Janityara sera vilasa. Jive Debo Gudhadhana Chinti Krishna Vrindavana. Jodiyani Kori Lo Prakasha. Krishna Mora Daya Rasa Gara. Tumi Mana Braja Dhamma Brahmi Brahmi Abhirama. Dako Krishna Koi Akatara. Avidya Vilasavase Chili Tumi Jogarase. Dushta Tahridaye Pailo Shana. Pahile tumi satya raja bhulile apana kaja. Hridaya borile abhimana. Ebe upadesha shuno gaiya jugala guna. Goshte goshte koro haro dhana. Daya kori giri dara shuniya kakuti shoro. Tabe dosha kori beso dhana. Ujvelera sera priti sri radha bhajana niti. Anayase divenaya maya. Krupa ragunata more kripa kore atapore. Tattva gopane sikhaya. Praja bhumi chintamani chittananda ratnakhani. Jata nitya rasera bilasa. The touchstones of the land of Braja, mine, a blissful consciousness jewelry, where eternal mellows abound. To give souls a hidden treasure, the contemplation of Krishna's Goloka Vrindavan on the earth caused the appearance of this same Vrindavana to come down. My Krishna is the ocean of compassion and mercy. O, you mind, proceed to Braja Dham. Wander, wander all around, call Krishna mind, choked with devotion. Residing in ignorance's play, you gave me only mundane tastes. In my wicked heart, my obtained tragedy took place. Mind, you are the king of cheats. You made me forget my true work, and you filled my heart with ego's dirt. Hear this advice, sing of Radha Krishna's qualities. Cry out for the land and residents of Vrindavan. Be kind, you who held up the hill. Hear my voice, choked and shrill. Please rectify my every vice. O joy of conjugal mellows is the continual worship of Sri Radha. O Giridhari, if you agree, you can easily give that to me. My Rupa Raghunatha Prabhus, I beg some mercy from you. Please teach me the secret of devotion. So, yatha drishtatvamame darayati satasyapi krupaya yatha mayam premamritamapi adyujvalam. So, yatha sri gandharava bhajana vidaye prerayati mam tatha goshte kakva giridharamihatvam bhajamana. O mind, please reside in Braja and earnestly worship Lord Krishna, the lifter of Govardhan Hill, fervently praying to him with utter humility to please him. Surely he will shower his causeless mercy upon a despicably deceitful soul like me, cleansing my heart of all dishonesty and pretense. Surely, he will bless me with the wonderful nectar of prema, divine love of God, and inspire me to engage in the serving the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani. So this verse before commenting on this, I might as well start to offer obeisances to Namo Vrindavani Ramana Reti Prasiddha Bhumo Tatrapi Krishna Balarama Saparamule Gyanam Paramparamai Krishna Sudharma Chuktam Dandastu Deva Prabhupada Namo Namaste Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sachidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rubanu Gavaraya Te Vande Rupa Sanatana Oragoya Goshi Jiva Gopalako Vansha Kalpadarubhya Chakripasan Nubhyevacha Pritanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnavi Bhyo Namo Namam. So, association with sadhus. Because in the previous shloka it mentioned that for fine-tuning, removing any traces of subtle desires for profit, adoration, and distinction, one takes shelter of the spiritual master who is dear to Krishna, and he will kick out that unpalatable, inappropriate thing and allow pure love for Krishna to enter. Which means that when the disciple becomes rectified by submissive inquiries, service attitude at the feet of his superiors, by their grace, all types of disturbances in his mentality that are make him ayogya, unqualified, unfit to be accepted to serve Krishna, become destroyed. When these obstacles are destroyed, then it means that such a submissive disciple becomes attracted then to Krishna's pastimes, activities, etc. There's a verse glorifying Suta Goswami. First canto, first chapter, verse number 8. Veta tvam shome tat sarvam tatvatas teranugrahat bruyush nigdas yasushyasya guruvo gurumaputa. Because you are submissive, you've obtained all the favors that the spiritual masters can offer upon a gentle disciple. And therefore, explain to us everything that you have heard from them. So, when you receive extraordinary mercy, specifically the mercy which cuts through tightly your attachments, you are attached to some particular philosophical platform or false ego or something like this, deeply rooted. And when it was smashed happily, peacefully, nicely by some sadhus, you know, who are your associates, then you never forget that. And later on you dance joy as your good fortune that Krishna arranged that this anartha was uprooted by these sadhus, or, you know, you were saved from further degradation by the mercy of these sadhus, by their kindness, etc. You never forget that kindness, right? So such kindness then allows the mind to appreciate the Krishnananda of the spiritual master and the previous acharyas, etc. increasingly. They allows you to appreciate the Krishnananda, the happiness of Krishna consciousness. So by that, the disciple, the student then drowns more in Krishna life. More. This is after anarthas is gone. Bhakti bhavati naishtiki, as Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, verse 7, verse 18, I think it is. Yeah, mentions this. Bhakti bhavati naishtiki, that when one's devotional service becomes fixed, freed from all types of obstacles, subtle and gross, there are obstacles which are very, very subtle, fine obstacles that only very good purified souls could see. And many times they may, if it is occasionally manifest, they may overlook, but if it is a continual disease, then they will attack to remove it. But sometimes it's not seen by the ordinary public. Very subtle maya, very subtle weeds and arthas, difficulties. When these are removed, then a devotee, another thing about it is one becomes greedy for Krishna, then one becomes eager to inquire from his spiritual masters, the devotees, you know, you become eager to find more in Ardhas, subtle in Ardhas. You're actually begging for their fine tuning. You're actually begging for their fine tuning. Soliciting their advice. Otherwise, sometimes Vaishnavas, they're so tolerant, you know, that they will just overlook anything, you know. Oh, Krishna will do it later on, or Krishna will let him know. So if you want to make it quicker, you may ask them. You may ask them to tell us more, you know, like that. In this way, the devotee, if they take advantage of those instructions to actually apply it in their life, there's no drinking water, glasses anymore. Then by taking advantage in this way, the devotee becomes more attached to a stage of ruchi. At the stage of ruchi, one becomes very much attached to hearing Krishna's pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, and these other devotional literatures. In this way, one becomes attached to drinking the nectar of Krishna Katha and sees everything in the relation to his daily experiences. Wherever he may wander, he will see everything in relation to the nectar that he's presently meditating on and drinking. And any type of interpersonal activity with other people will be in that positive light. That positive light. Therefore, in the Madhurya Kadambini there, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes very sweetly about even ordinary conversation with a devotee doing Govardhan Parikrama or something, and speaking with some innocent child like that. The statement that the child makes, he will not take it from an ordinary point of view. He will take it that Krishna is being kind, showing kindness to me today, or like this. There's so many subtle things. They will take it in terms of the nectar that they're drinking. They will try to see Krishna anywhere and everywhere where they wander in Vrindavan, and like that. They will try to see the presence of Krishna anywhere and everywhere. This is called the budding platform of ruchi. At this stage, it mentions, previously, although one was afflicted by fatigue, different times, you had to spend so much time resting, taking care of your health, etc., etc. When one attains the platform of ruchi, one gets mercy from Krishna in the extent that one is not disturbed by fatigue. One gets boundless transcendental energy to hear and chant and relish Krishna Katha. So night and day, this is why it says in this about this Bhava Bhakti type of platform, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ratri Drini Kori Braje Krishna Rasarvan, night and day, they serve Krishna within the mind in Vrindavan. So you cannot serve night and day. Human beings generally require 6 hours of rest or 4 hours of rest in older age and like that, you see? But when you're absorbed in Krishna, then they can forget about those things. They can forget about those things, proportionate to their attachment to Krishna. To just forget about it, actually. It is not that the Goswamis were trying to be mitabuk, artificially restraining their eating process. They just forgot about it. They were so absorbed in drinking nectar of Radha Krishna and Vrindavan, the Lord's pastimes in Vrindavan, writing about it, expanding the nectar, researching it from different Shastric points of view. They were so busy. Even in nighttime, it was described, continue writing by lighting up piles of leaves. They would gather up stacks of leaves and then they would burn them. And then when the fire went down, they would add more leaves. You know, this way the fire brightly burning. Sometimes they would continue writing. This is one description I heard from different devotees. Even night and day, they would engage in their activities. Serving Krishna. It's quite surprising. So, associating with saintly persons, so powerful that it eradicates even the most abominable impurities from one's heart, elevates the spirit soul to the level of perfection. Now, unfortunately, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is being very realistic here in this purport. Such saintly association is not always available. And thus, the following instructions are given to us in this verse. This is about Sudainya Mati, praying to the Supreme Lord and His eternal associates for mercy. A humble plea indicates a mood of sincere surrender and devotion, particularly when the devotee feels that he's the most wretched person without any shelter to protect him. Then as an example, he is quoting this Rupa Goswami and Gandharva Sampartana Astakam. O Radharani, you and Lord Krishna are constantly relishing ambrosial amorous pastimes in the love groves of Vrindavan, like the intoxicated king of elephants sporting with his queen, elephant. Please be compassionate upon the soul, and thus being pleased, allow me to behold your two lotus-like faces. My pleadiful prayers, because he's an ocean of compassion, and he will certainly help me. The faith that is part of Sharanagati, the faith that Krishna will surely protect one. Krishna will surely help one. This is part of Sharanagati. So, yathadrishtatvame, although I am deceitful, although in the past I was, that's one of the qualities of Ruchi, as described in Madhurya Kadambini, that a devotee, once he attains this lofty stage of being attached to hear Krishna Katha all the time, then they lament. It's a characteristic that we're constantly lamenting for the past before they attain Ruchi. Oh, for so many births, for so many years, I was avoiding you, my dear friend Krishna. See, we were so avoiding you. I was such a rascal, you know. And there, so a common characteristic is lamenting inwardly, sometimes outwardly, that I wasted so many valuable years in this life and so many lives forgetting Krishna, my Prananath. You see? So that's one characteristic. So therefore, in that context, you can see Raghunath Das, where he says, Yatha dushtatvam me, although I'm a dushta, although I'm a rascal. Yatha dushtatvam me, dariyati sata, satasyapi kripaya. Satasya. Satasya means a cheater. Even though I'm a rascal and a cheater, certainly Krishna will be kind and give me a little mercy. Yatha mayam premamritam api, and he will give me the nectar of prema, of love for him. Drown me in the energy, prema mayi. This, the mahamaya is the external energy, and the prema mayi, or the yoga maya, is the spiritual energy under the control of the Hladini Shakti. Yatha mayam premamritam api, yadyujvalamaso. Then he will plunge me in the ocean of nectar, a brilliantly shining nectar of spiritual, energetic ocean of pleasure. Yatha Sri Gandharava Bhajana Vidaye Prerayati Mam. And he will engage me in the service of Srimati Radharani. Tathagoshte Kakva. Therefore, in this land of Vrindavan, Kakva, I'm calling out to Giridhari very pitifully. Giridhari is very significant in this connection because Krishna held up the hill. By that, all the Vrajavasis were allowed to come together. Right? And he protected all the Vrajavasis. He fulfilled his vow, Vrajanaro Pasupakshi Vratasoke Gadata, that he fulfills the happiness of all of Vrindavan's land, birds, animals, completely. That was Krishna's role as Giridhari. He did so uncompromisingly for the pleasure of all of his Vrajavasis. So because Krishna fulfilled all their desires and gave them full protection and shelter under the umbrella of Govardhan Hill, by crying out to Giridhari, you fulfilled all their desires, you protected them, why aren't you protecting me also? You're kind and compassionate, Krishna, you should protect me. How should you protect me? By engaging me in the service of your dearmost Radharani. That's what I desire. That will give me full protection. So because Krishna is kind, surely devotees that are sincere, he grants them according to their sincerity. So that's the idea. Tatha goshte kakva giridhara miha tvamba jamana. Therefore, in Vrindavan, I'm crying out to Krishna. So one has to practice this. You cannot do this artificially, but one should practice it. Gorgovinda Maharaj in one lecture was saying, this is our defect as Westerners. Our heart is so hard. We cannot learn the process of crying for Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Kandiya, Kandiya. Bole. I am constantly staying in this crying and crying again. We're hard-hearted Westerners and this and that. We cannot even learn the process of crying for Krishna. The tears should not be artificial. They should be genuine. So, somehow or another. So, in Vrindavan, calling out for Krishna's sweet names, Krishna has many, many sweet names, become attached to some of them. And occasionally you may loudly call out the name. Now, the name of the Lord is none different from the Lord. There's one statement Prabhupada made, a letter to Vishnu Jana Swami, which is now in his museum in Bombay, that if you feel depressed or despondent, at once loudly sound out the name of Krishna, the holy name of Krishna. And by that loud reverberation of Krishna's name, then all inauspiciousness and depression will go away. Narottam Das Thakur sings in his Shunya Govinda Rabha. When one hears the Singa Rabe, it's like when you call out Shunya Govinda Rabha, when you hear the sound of Krishna's name being screamed out loudly, then it becomes like the lion roar that drives away all inauspiciousness and all fears from the heart of the devotee. So by calling out Krishna's name with affection, loudly sometimes, and what's another effect, because Krishna is not different from his name, Krishna comes running. One sadhu, the grandfather of one devotee here, he took me to his grandfather in Swarup Ganj. I think it was like maybe 1996 or so, before his grandfather gave up his body. His grandfather was doing Nam Bhajan for a good, you know, most of his life. Elderly, 70, 80 year old, maybe 90 year old, like that, huh? And so he had chanted more than 1 lakh of Hari Nam daily. So I asked him questions about Nam Bhajan, about developing attachment for the name of Krishna. And when I asked him one thing about sometimes we're attached to our job, but sometimes not, how to increase this Nam Ruchi? So he answered very pleasingly. He said, if you call out the name of your friend, then he'll come. He said it very sweetly. So this Shunya Kakushkatishvara, Raghunath Das Goswami is agreeing with this statement that by when you asking Krishna, please hear, Krishna will hear it. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in Sharanagati, in the introductory bhajan, Saranga Sharanagati Hoibe Jahara Tara Prarthana Sune Srinanda Kumara. If your prayers to Krishna are imbued with the 6 symptoms of surrender, then Krishna will hear your statement. Otherwise, he's not obliged to hear it. He is self-satisfied. He doesn't have to. So the problem with Western orientation, we have not yet learned the process of how to feelingly cry out to Krishna plaintively, helplessly, like a child calling for a mother. Ma! Like this. Prabhupada described example, like once he was on the train with his son, Vrindavan, and the titiwala, you know, the ticket taker, traveling ticket examiner, TTE, came to check the tickets. So the TTE decided to have some fun with the kid. So he said, where's your ticket? And the boy looked around. Gee, I have no ticket. You know, there's no ticket in my pocket. Gee, no ticket? Then you must get down. And the boy said, but I have my father. He said like that, you know. And then his father produced the ticket. Now here's the ticket for the boy, you know. Like that. So, but just to play with the boy, the TTE made the guy. So, we have nothing to worry, Prabhupada mentioned in the tape. There are many things in the material world that causes worry, but we will cry out to Krishna with faith and love, and Krishna will hear us and protect his devotee, taking shelter of the holy name. So, become attached. Bhaktivinoda in Bhajana Rahasya says, Naktanga divacha gati bija didnigdra eko mitabhuga prasanna yet ajuti bhagavati swamanona sajjina namani tadvati karani patet vilajja. If attachment to the holy name of Krishna has not dawned on the tongue, He says, then once you chant those names of Krishna, that gives rati, attraction. Chant shamelessly, day and night. Cry out for Krishna, very plaintively. He says like that. So it's a wonderful example. So find some sweet names of Krishna that attract your heart and mind in a very affectionate way, ties you up with the ropes of affection to Krishna, very sweetly. Krishna has many sweet qualities and sweet names. So call out to the Lord in that way. Or the Lord or His consort like that, in very, very sweet. Like, for example, sweet names of Radharani is Rai Kishori, like that, or many, many sweet names dripping with nectar. For each of the Lord and His associates, there are sweet names given to the Lord by the residents of Vrindavan, describing the Lord's qualities. So they are dripping with nectar, all these names. So when you call out them with affection, with concern, then it pleases the Lord very, very much. And it bonds the heart of the devotee with the Lord. And the name is none different. When you call out that name, the Lord comes running as if called. It's described that when Draupadi called out, "Hey Govinda," very helplessly, then Krishna came running. "I was forced to come by your calling out very nicely. I became very dependent upon, obliged by your calling," Krishna told Draupadi later on, "because you called with such feeling." So devotees should call with such feeling. Then when you call the name of your friend, then he'll come. So we should practice this. Our hearts should not become so hard. In the land of Vrindavan, the sweetness of Vrindavan's dust, the land of Vrindavan should enliven us so that we may chant Krishna's sweet name and call out to Him with affection. Then Krishna, by His kindness, in reciprocation with His sincerity, the devotee will cut all your sinful desire seeds to pieces. Whatever burnt remnants of anartha is in the heart, He will cut them to pieces and bestow attraction for Srimati Radharani or His friends, Krishna's friends, or any type of, in any of the relationships that are predominant. This is Raghunath Das Goswami's statement. So we'll explore this more tomorrow. We have more time tomorrow to explore Sloka number 8. Is there now? Isn't it? Everybody...